welcome to Podcast on Fire 93. And this is Kenneth Rosen, your host, and it's unfortunately sans the master of the Podcast on Fire Network, Stuart Sutherland, this evening. But joining me for the first time on a regular Podcast on Fire is my This Week in Sleaze co-host, King Ho. So say hello.
Howdy.
Owner of a scarily big Laserdisc collection. It's that King Ho.
King Ho?
It's not the Dragon Inn King Ho, who's dead. By the way, so
oh,
doesn't matter.
Start off on a downer.
King of dead. So, how's the discovery process of what movies those discs with Chinese only titles contain? From that big Laserdisc lot. How's that process going? Is it still fun?
It's still fun. It's kind of on pause right now. I have so many to look through, and I just have other things to do. But I've discovered a few, like Revanchist.
Sweet.
Yeah, Ninja in the Dragon's Den.
Oh yeah, was that on Laserdisc?
Yeah. I mean, I found a bunch of discs that have English titles that I've never heard of, and I've kind of did a little research on them. Titles like Paris Mon Coeur, To Kill a Gambling King, Summer's Romance. And my favorite title, this title's excellent, Behind the Bathroom Door.
I bet it's a fucking hardcore porn shot on video.
Well, what happened, I put it on and I was trying, and it's Japanese.
Oh.
It turned out to be Japanese, and I assume it's a pink film from the 80s, but I'm not familiar with, the pink films. So the director, I found out, was a guy named Shogoro Nishimura. So, and he turned out to be a director of pink films in the 80s, but I couldn't find any information on the film.
But it's
dubbed into Cantonese.
It's dubbed into Cantonese. Subtitled?
Subtitled, yeah. Yeah, and also the other one, To Kill a Gambling Mastermind, is also it's like a Japanese film from the 70s.
Wow.
Yeah, both of these films, I mean, I'm not accustomed to watching pink films. Maybe I've seen one or two, but these are, I guess, Hong Kong edits, because you can tell when things get a little too hot and heavy, things are just edited right out. So.
Well, on the Japanese prints, they would have been pixelated out,
any shots
of the Never regions, which was also fun with the pink films, because they had to choose to shoot it in a clever way, therefore, to avoid silly pixelation.
Well, these films did have shots of Nether regions unpixelated.
Right,
which surprised me. Yeah, and just before I went a little too far or too into something, the edit came.
They edited in some shots of birds tweeting instead. Like.
Yeah,
what
Wong Jing's face. Yes. So other titles, the Paris Mon Coeur, I discovered was directed by a French, I guess he's a porn director or adult film director, Pierre B. Reinhardt. If that is his real name. But he also directed another Hong Kong French co-production, Face d'Ange, from 1994, and I think it was maybe a companion piece to 7 Days in Paris.
Right.
Yeah, I haven't seen that film. Yeah, but I've seen Face d'Ange, and so I think they probably just made it on the same time, 93-94.
Right. So, that's kind of cool, even though they might be boring as shit. But
Face of Angel was shit.
No one is talking about these kind of movies, and that makes me happy to see someone mentioning them even briefly, which is super cool. But more on that on This Week in Sleaze sometime.
And the last one, The Summer's Romance, turned out to be a Category 3 movie from 1993 with our good buddy Charlie Cho. It was The Long Hot Summer.
Right, that I've seen. It's on DVD under Love. Its title is Love Must Be Crazy on DVD.
Yes.
And I remember that shit.
Yeah.
To be honest, and that's rather sad, because I remember looking it up on Hong Kong Movie Database. Well, in Podcast on Fire's listeners' ears, that might be sad. But when we're on This Week in Sleaze, it's, you are king and we are king and queen of. I don't know where I'm going with that, but screw it up. it's actually not the first time you're on the Podcast on Fire. You're actually on our Japan Benefit podcast a few months
ago,
which featured the 3 hours of content featuring last movies watched with me, you, and Stu, an hour on Sammo Hung with Stu, myself, Phil Gillen of easternfilmfans.co.uk, and friend of the show and Lau Galung fanatic, Mike Maley, was also on that. And the third hour was like this mini What's Korean Cinema on The Chaser.
Yay!
A movie we're actually very familiar with and we actually like.
The only Korean movie that I know.
Well, it's a good movie to know also. On that show, hour rather, was me, Stu, and Martin Cleary of newkoreancinema.com. And we also had fight choreographer and writer John Krang on for a little bit, and V Cinema's Coffin John. Plus, you had an additional 3 hours of members only content where connected to that, the benefit show. And all the details of how you can access that show will be in the show post for this one. But in short, if you send in a receipt of a donation to the likes of Red Cross or Japan Society, we'll send you a link back to the entire 3 hour show. So we're not accepting donations, we just want to see that you made a donation to a good cause, and you get 3 hours of good content. So I'll link you to that information. That members only content I mentioned can be reached on our forum via a free simple registration on it, and it's located at podcastonfire.com/forum. And the main site, of course, of the Podcast on Fire network is podcastonfire.com, which houses the very show you're listening to, Podcast on Fire, sometimes unofficially perhaps known as the Eken Hour. And or maybe the Eken Hour will be a separate show eventually on the network. We also have Japan on Fire, currently enjoying our Studio Ghibli season, which has so far produced the intro show and a review of Laputa, Castle in the Sky. We also have Commentary on Fire, which will go active again in the near future, with me and King, actually. And those details about what commentary we are supposed to do, they are on the 92nd episode, as you might have heard. We're actually doing Red to Kill, me and King, and that's going to be a... I would say it's a mix of fun and info, but that movie is so fucking cruel.
Right.
So
I'd hate to talk over it.
it's kind of, you know, how much fun are we going to have on that one? But yeah. Who knows? But we're going to try to be as informative as we can. And obviously we have What's Korean Cinema on the network. Coming soon is Memories of Murder, the special Memories on Memories of Murder, movie I greatly enjoyed, have forgotten pretty much everything about, which is cool, because it's going to be kind of a new experience, and I can get it on Blu-ray nowadays, so it's going to be fun. And of course, our baby, King and I, are on This Week in Sleaze. And perhaps that's unofficially known as the Charlie Cho Hours.
Mm-hmm.
Not the hour, hours.
Hours.
Yeah. And we have lots of plans about that, so but we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Plans for the next few shows. But our contact information otherwise on social media are on Facebook, and we finally have a more simple address to remember, so it's facebook.com/POF network. And we are on Twitter, which is twitter.com/podcastonfire. I can be reached on Twitter via my twitter.com/sogoodreviews, because I am the writer of sogoodreviews.com, where you can find written reviews of the best and worst of Category 3 cinema, the forgotten Taiwan exploitation cinema of the 70s and 80s, and the golden nuggets of IFD's ninja exploitation cinema can be found there. And those are steps towards rebuilding the golden ninja empire. You've been warned. It's coming again, and Mike Leader has the flimsy golden ninja warrior statue to prove it! So, and all that content is available in video form on at Sleazy Case, rather. So despite the smell, come on in. It's at sleazykvideo.com. And my good friend and co-host King has a blog, so go ahead and plug that.
Yes, you can find my blog, Bullets Over Chinatown, at inthemoodforguailo.blogspot.com. Guailo is spelled G-W-A-I-L-O.
What's going on the blog in short?
Just throwing up a lot of posters that I had that I just got in. A friend of mine, who you know, Kenny from Facebook, just sent me a bunch of scans of old Shaw Brother lobby cards, some not safe for work Shaw Brother lobby cards, which are my favorite kind of Shaw Brother lobby cards.
The only kind you should, because they were not subtle, those lobby cards, you know.
And
they're
unstained, which is pretty cool.
And now they're going to be stained.
So that was my last post, a handful of those lobby cards.
Yeah, but like some Miniskirt Gang, Lost Souls, cheery and kind of creepy movies at the same time. Lost Souls. Did you like or saw Lost Souls?
Oh, I got along very well with Lost Souls.
That was a pretty hardcore movie.
It was very, very hardcore. It was a very surprising movie. Yeah.
I'm actually trying to go back and re-examine because I haven't seen any movie from T.F. Mao or Mao Tao Fei or Tong Fei or other than Trilogy of Lust. So I'm kind of keen to go back to Shaw Brothers days and try and, you know, look at Lost Souls again and look at Men Behind the Sun, which we might do on This Week in Sleaze, actually, because it's such a talked of Category 3 movie.
That would be cool. I'd be up for that, yeah.
And it would be a serious discussion, I think, because and it would take a little bit of research, not totally in depth, you know, in terms of now we're going to give you the history lesson, but... As always, put things in perspective. And Men Behind the Sun, this Japanese experiment camp, if you will, the real 731, I think, experiment camp. It's a movie that still is, in some circles, regarded as this is only scraping the surface of what horrible things went
on.
Right. And if it is pure exploitation in a nasty, shameless way. I'll be the judge of that. You know, I haven't seen it,
really? Okay.
No, I mean, I've always, I don't know. It just felt too nasty for me. But I've slowly, over the years, you know, seen a few of those movies I never thought I was going to be able to endure. You know, and I've seen a few sequences from Men Behind the Sun, some of the famous animal cruelty in it.
That's rough stuff.
And I could take it. So it's like, okay, I can probably do a show on this. So.
Right, and they also had the sequel, Men Behind the Sun, The Laboratory of the Devil, which was a Godfrey Ho film.
That's right.
Which wasn't like a real true sequel. You know, they're trying to just latch on to the Men Behind the Sun name. And there was, I think it was a part three too, Narrow Escape.
Yeah, either I don't know, either it was that someone added that later or I don't know, but no connection between the three in terms of here's the continuing story of these characters.
So. It's just a similar, atrocities, you know, war atrocity films.
Yeah, but that's in the future, so that's going to be interesting. Actually, I'm keen to do that and take it seriously, despite doing it within a show called This Week in Sleaze.
Then we'll throw in some Charlie Cho for the fans.
Yeah,
so.
that's a, you know, the last segment where everyone can exhale.
Right.
Please talk about some fucked up Charlie Cho stuff. Does it involve a blow up doll? Like, phew.
What man is he banging this week?
Network updates on the podcast on Fire Network. I mean, we can just talk in general what goes on. We've a few weeks ago, depending on when this show comes out, we published the likes of What's Korean Cinema on the movie Friend, and This Week in Sleaze 5 came out, our first Shaw Boobies special.
Woo!
on the swordplay movie The Night of Night with a little bit of flesh.
Booby nights.
Yeah. So it's the first track back to the early days of sexploitation of in Hong Kong cinema, or Hong Kong cinema, if you will. Which, you know, that show's unofficial title, as I said, should be The Shaw Boobies Hour, or Hours. But, you know, plans in the pipeline for the network are plenty, including on that show and all the other ones. So follow our Twitter and Facebook updates, or even on the forums regarding that. But if you haven't followed Twitter or Facebook or the forum, here's an announcement of an exciting show happening in the future. I was a few months ago given a VHS copy of a really awesome Taiwan monster movie called Calamity, aka War God, that has the god, red faced god, General Quan battle Martians. It's a monster movie in the vein of all the Godzillas, if you will. It's a many suit monster movie. And I was so inspired by the favorable response by some of my Facebook friends that I showed it. I uploaded it to a torrent site. So, but I said, like, you guys, you're gonna love this. And mm-hmm. and I showed it to you. I showed it to my good friend Brian Kirby and also Sylvia. And that crew, I've actually gathered together to do a sort of a roundtable discussion on Calamity. And it's currently being researched. Sylvia's putting in some great translation work from she's looking at some blogs in Chinese and some old articles on the movie, and that's going to be so much fun. Given that movie some, you know, more widespread rumor, if you will, because it's not a widely available movie.
Right.
And you, as a really non-fan of that kind of filmmaking, the Godzillas and what have you, you kind of dug Calamity, did you?
Oh, I loved it. It was totally enjoyable. Totally yeah. enjoyable. And I don't know. Yeah, I'm a layman. I don't know much about the kaiju genre.
And it really, was great. It was fun to explore it via Taiwan, which is not easy because there's not a whole lot of information on Taiwan monster movies. But I like the idea of anything done outside of Japan to try to capitalize, try mm-hmm. to imitate. And Calamity did it very well.
And since seeing Calamity, I've discovered a few more. They're unsubtitled, but I've come across a few more. I've yet to watch them, but if you're interested, I will send them along, definitely.
Oh, sweet. Absolutely sweet. Yeah, yeah. I heard some examples on the... I think it's a site called Tarkus.net.
Yes.
They did a podcast or two on mm-hmm. a few of these movies, and yeah, they said exactly that. They have no subtitles, and some of them are cut-and-paste efforts.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But still, they have cool monster footage, and not bad footage of that kind. Some movies, this included, even had Japanese talent on them. So, so no wonder they looked kind of on par with some of the most fun movies in this genre.
Well, that podcast is going to be great for me because I absolutely know nothing about the kaiju genre from Japan or even, you know, Taiwan's brief foray into kaiju.
Well,
so.
If you want to learn more about the kaiju genre in Japan, you have the Japan on Fire series that we did. We actually did six shows on it. Six shows, man.
What a segue. I set them up, you knock them down. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a whore. And I love it. But do check out the Japan on Fire series. It was really fun because we were so fortunate to be directed towards, you know, some really cool people, including Brian Kirby, which I think it was the first time I ever spoke to Brian, was on, you know, the subject of kaiju. We had John Krang on the show, a friend of his called Ronald Strong, really knowledgeable guy, really fun, and August Ragone, this really respected guy within the Japanese cinema community of when it comes to these kind of movies. And we also did two shows, me, Stu, and Mike Banner, on Destroy All Monsters, which is one of the Godzilla movies, and also Daimajin, this wonderful samurai / monster movie, because it's about this stone god that
right.
comes to life, and it's set in, you know, in samurai days. It's really a wonderful movie that Brian Kirby directed me towards. So I do recommend that, King, actually. That series is really, really funny, and it's and the sole focus is Japan for that series, and six episodes.
Okay.
So you have something to take in there. But that's the network update in a nutshell. So we'll be moving on to our last movies watched, and since I'm tired of hearing myself talk, I want like a 2-minute break or 3-minute break. So, King, Phil, what was the last movie you watched, and what is there to say about it?
Last night I actually watched Let the Bullets Fly.
Ah.
Yeah, I was interested in it, and a buddy of mine actually gave it to me. He bought it in Hong Kong, and he didn't feel like watching it. Didn't feel up to watching it, so he just sent it to me, and I gave it a shot. Anything with Chow Yun-fat, I'm going to give a shot.
Still the coolest motherfucker.
Oh,
right?
My
love
God.
Chow Yun-fat.
He is the best. I want to have his babies, if possible. yeah. But I'm just an aside about mainland cinema. I just don't dig mainland cinema. It's a chore to watch. So I went into Let the Bullets Fly like really wanting to like it, but just having a feeling that I just wasn't going to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it shocked the crap out of me. It was
right.
a very energetic movie. I mean, it's over 2 hours. They could cut a half hour out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people have shit to do, You know, 2 hours is way too long. You know, but it was it maintained its energy for pretty much the entire 2 hours. Maybe one or two scenes, you know, lagged a bit, but you know, it was off the wall enough, a little, you know, quirky enough. Had these bright comic book colors, and it was like a graphic novel almost. You know,
cool.
Yeah.
I mean, English title anyway. You know, that's energetic. You know?
Oh, definitely. And
this is gonna be like, and Giant Fats is gonna be like a John Woo movie.
Yeah. It's not quite like that, but there are a few gunplay scenes that are okay, and it's just irreverent and it's fun, and it's very stylish. It's very spirited, and I mean, again, it's like, you know, over 2 hours long, but I dug it. I dug it. I mean, I still think mainland cinema is garbage, but I dug it.
I have a relationship with mainland cinema, not a very current one though, because I'm not much of a fan of the your heroes or your House of Flying Daggers. I mean,
yeah, me neither.
But I do like this straightforward, unpretentious, like village dramas that director made, Chang Ji-mo, Road Home, Not One Less. Are these right. Like very sweet, straight dramas? And I'm not an avid follower, and I'm not keeping a track of and keeping up with the mainland Hong Kong co-productions of today, because
that annoys me. Yeah, they annoy me. I just can't get on with them. I just cannot get on pandering to the mainland market. It's just it's very ungenre like. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to be kind of arty, and it takes some of the creative energy out of Hong Kong filmmakers when they make it for the mainland market.
And that's why it's so refreshing to hear some Hong Kong filmmakers saying, like, fuck the mainland. I'm not going to compromise anything.
I love that. Like, Herman Yao, you know, he's...
Yeah, and Derek
Kong,
Yi.
Exactly. It's just, I love that. You know, good. Stay in Hong Kong. Do your thing. Mm-hmm. You know?
And I only have, like, a mild opinion on this whole Hong Kong mainland thing, because I'm not too knowledgeable. But I do recognize what you're saying. Like, this is a chore to sit down in front of, and that feeling, I admire
like
that
work.
You overcame that feeling with this movie, but that feeling I'm always very conscious of. If I feel that, I'd rather turn to something that I haven't seen, that's probably going to be at least 10% cool, you know, to watch an IFD movie with 80 minutes of boring fucking crap, but 10 minutes of Richard Harrison ninja scenes, that's just sweet.
Right.
You know, so you have to pick and choose, really, depending on what you do. With movies, in my case, I review a whole lot of them, so there's only so much time, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool. I mean, was this a gangster movie, 20s, 30s, 40s gangster movie, or am I completely off?
It was kind of a gangster movie. You're a bit off. I don't know how to describe the film. It's very anachronistic. It's like a comic book. It's like nothing I have really seen before. I guess I've heard it compared to the Korean film, The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, and I never saw that film.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, but it's kind of a gangster western. It's really hard to pigeonhole this film.
And not too flashy for its own good.
No, not really. It was stylish, and it was energetic, and it kept up the pace pretty much for its 2 hour running time. Hmm. Yeah.
I always liked actor director Jiang Wen. I think he's a cool cat, actually.
In this film, he's a really cool cat.
I recommend The Missing Gun if you want to see another main.
Yes,
movie.
Yes.
Well, you did see that one?
I saw it years ago. Actually, yeah. Blockbuster Video had it here, maybe like 10 years.
Yeah,
ago.
It was a Columbia TriStar distributed the movie, so it got the worldwide release. Kind of a cool little movie that with many different moves, because it's a very at times very energetic, flashy movie for a mainland movie.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole mystery about his missing gun, this cop's missing gun, it turns a bit deep and somber as well. But it's a fairly fun movie from a director I quite like, actually. I think it's called Lu Chuan. He made the movie I saw, the first movie of his I saw was this movie called Kekishili Mountain Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a very good drama about poachers in Tibet, I think. So, and about this true story about this little volunteer unit trying to protect whatever animals they were trying to protect. I forget now, but it was a really, really good movie. Strangely disturbing movie, set in like coldest areas possibly, really possible, really. I do recommend it. It's on. It was also taken care of by Columbia TriStar. So, Mountain Patrol is probably the easiest title to look it up. If you search on Amazon or what have you, but the Kekishili Mountain Patrol. He also made City of Life. He also made City of Life and Death, the Nanking movie from about 2 years ago.
Right.
Which I heard good things about as well. So that's a director I kind of I'm impressed by. His movies doesn't look boring beforehand to me, and that's enough of, you know, encouragement to sit down and watch them, you know what I mean?
Right.
And the Nanking movie, I heard that Nanking movie was for once a very balanced movie about the atrocities in Nanking. You know, normally those movies are not very balanced.
Very skewed, yeah, very skewed.
Exactly.
Definitely.
And also, you know, speaking of T.F. Mao, he made his Nanking movie, the Black Sun, the Nanking Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
Another movie that we might cover for this weekend's release. So, you know, it's and Let the Bullets Fly. I mean, anything Chiang Fat is in, pretty much anything though.
Right.
I think he still has the cool in place, especially now that he's taking less Hollywood projects and more mainland projects, because he never works in Hong Kong. There's a running joke, which is not really a joke, it's a fact, that he hasn't spoken Cantonese in movies for quite a long time. And Mandarin is probably not he's not very comfy in Mandarin to this day. You know, that was always the thing with Crouching Tiger, for people who knew Mandarin, that they thought that Chiang Fat's Mandarin didn't sound
I remember
good.
Reading that, yeah.
But to me, it really didn't matter, because he's the man. He's the fucking man.
Yeah, he was excellent in Let the Bullets Fly a lot. He's so energetic, so fun. He just has that awesome smile.
Oh yeah.
You know, and he acts very outrageous in this movie. It's just awesome. It's awesome seeing him. And Karina Lau is in this as well.
Oh really?
But I don't know why she's in it. She's kind of I don't want to give anything away, but she's not well used, and she disappears, you know, a quarter of the way in.
Right.
So I don't know what her deal was, but it's a recommended. I definitely Let the Bullets Fly is fun. Is mainland fun.
Oh, there you go. surprising for a lot of people, and definitely you. So cool that you enjoyed that. And I'm going to watch that, because Chiang Fat, you know, I can watch him brush his fucking teeth.
I was going to say that. Oh, yeah. You took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah, you said that of the likes of Mark Cheng, and that's true. But Chiang Fat, I can't watch him do anything. And him being a little bit wacky is always welcome. You know, 20 years past his 80s wackiness, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Your eighth happiness, or Diary of a Big Man wackiness. Which he is awesome at. I think he's a wonderful comedian.
Definitely.
Or comedy presence. I think comedian is a bit, you know, that's another genre in itself. But screw that. Chiang Fat rules. King and I have both seen a movie I'm going to talk about. The Golden Corpse from China. And I misidentified this movie as the Golden Corpse from China.
Oh, so did I.
It's a hopping vampire movie in mainland. That could be fun. It's about cops.
That's exactly what I thought too.
Cool.
I got a DVD-R, and it was listed as, it was written, the Golden Corpse. So I'm like, all right, I got a hopping vampire.
Nice.
Yeah, I was so excited. I'm like, wait a second.
And then they were running like training all of a sudden. That's the title. Now
I try not to do too much research on movies. I want to go in clean, fresh, you know.
I actually did that for this one, even though I mis-ID'd it, but I didn't know anything about the Golden Corpse. How the hell do you pronounce this? Golden Corpse or Corpse?
Corpse.
There you go. And therefore, you can differentiate between the movies that way. So, knew nothing of it. It was a cop actioner, and it ended up, after 90 minutes for me, being a damn fun one in the Hong Kong schizophrenia tradition. And it's not like the movie that you know, shows that why Hong Kong cinema is beloved by so many, but it's a good example of, you know, the pure schizophrenia in this and desire to please as many as possible in 90 minutes. I mean, that and it's also known as Direct Line and Deadly Gold, but those titles are not as cool as this one.
I got it as a laser disc in my Discovery, my big purchase. Mm-hmm. It was a Direct Line. It was labeled.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And these cores are the mainland golden cores. You know, Wise Lee and Wu Mao, this small team that of mainland cops, they go to Hong Kong to retrieve stolen gold from a former team leader, which is Alan Choi, one of the film's the film's action director. Alan is a guy you know probably from many movies, but and I should probably be able to list 20 of them, but I only remember him from Last Hero in China with Jet Li, where he played the maniacally laughing villain versus Jet Li in Last Hero in China.
Okay.
And he's kind of a wonderful wonderful presence.
I love that guy. I remember him in Streets of Fury. He played a triad boss in Streets of Fury, where he shaved Teresa Mack's head.
Yeah,
I love that guy.
That pleasant sequence.
Yeah.
But it's a guy who likes to chew, and he chews scenery very well.
Yes, you know? He does.
And he's not like, this is beneath me after the 10th time I've played this. Shit, no, I'm going to play this. I'm going to play it hard. So he plays the former team leader. But Wise Lee and Wu Ma, they bump into Hong Kong's CID. Obviously, they need to cooperate with them. Kind of a tangent that Her Fatal Ways did so well with Carol Dudusheng as the mainland cop coming
to. This is kind of a riff on that series.
Absolutely. Not as broad, actually, but...
No.
And the main cop that they work with from Hong Kong is Mok, played by Yukari Oshima. And to be honest, the movie is kind of flimsy up until a point where director Lam Chin Wai begins inserting all, you know, everything possible into a plot to fill out 90 minutes. Thankfully, this director decides to do that at one point, and therefore he starts to entertain the hell out of the audience, at least me. And he introduces, you know, midpoint maybe, this actor called Lee Kwan playing the King of Spies, who picks up an immigrant called Alan that Wise Lee is also after. And the King of Spies starts interacting with Wu Ma's character kind of out of the blue. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
They have a relationship. And because Wu Ma possesses supernatural abilities that may benefit the king in betting and gambling. So here's an aside to the main plot. Let's have some betting and gambling. And also, you know, by this point, the movie just starts spinning like a motherfucker. You know, Wu Ma has X-ray vision apparently, which they shack up with Yukari Oshima's character, and she, or rather he eyes her. He sounds really pervert, to be honest, and she tries to protect herself with pots and pans from his X-ray vision. I don't know if he actually has X-ray vision, but
it was an extraordinary ability.
Oh, that's there you
what
go, that, so.
That's what they called it in the subtitles. Extraordinary ability.
And also, you know, he has psychic powers. He actually has powers, and he has the ability to bend guns and make them explode. And and they bring in Chung Fat as this witch master that is supposed to battle Wu Ma. It's just fucking crazy what's going on.
Yeah.
And I love it. Yeah. And you realize we've strayed, you know, from the main plot. But oddly enough, it's very coherent, despite being wild. You know, I'm on board. I know what's going on. And they know that there's a plot that they need to go back to eventually. But they're going to have a wild time doing this. And it culminates in this terrific stunt and gunplay finale where the filmmakers have loaded up the stuntmen with the largest fucking squibs possible.
It looked like their innards were coming out.
Oh, hell yeah. It was a mix of the story of Ricky and the Chow Yun Ping's Requital, that gangster movie.
Yeah.
Stomachs explode and stuntmen fall really painfully. You know, no, it's a warehouse finale, as per usual, but man, and for once, you know, Alan Choi has this shotgun there, which is why when he shoots people, their stomachs explode, you know. Finally, a shotgun makes the impact that I like on
film.
Kablooey splat. And you know, and add some in the background, some silly female Hong Kong cops that are completely useless, and some early in the film, I think, an accident with aphrodisiac. You realize what levels the golden cores from China operates at, and they are wonderful levels to be at, you know what I mean? And it's really, you know, speaking of energetic, you know, I think it, when it decided to be energetic, it kept up, you know, and I really, really dug it, and it was fun going into a movie knowing absolutely nothing, but I don't think this has any reputation because it's one of many from the early 90s.
Right.
I'm surprised Simon Yam wasn't in it.
I mean, oh, I know. Yeah.
Just so it would have been like a suitable movie for him to be in to play a cop or a boss or what have you. So, or maybe the mainland cops. So. But this was Wise Lee's time to shine. I actually dug Wise Lee in this. I thought he was, you know, he's not at all times a really good actor, but I thought he had good presence in this. He kind of, you know, he's a fairly good looking guy. And when he's not overacting, I think he can be a very solid presence.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. And I mean, Wise Lee was in the first Hong Kong movie I ever watched, and that was Bullet in the Head. And I was thought, you know, as excellent as that movie is, the weak link kind of is him when he turns really, really, you know, manic and turns into a maniac by the end, essentially. But it's still a, you know, hell of a performance. But I can see where he isn't as successful in that when being over the top. But I do dug him. I dig him. I really dig Wise Lee, who played Wise Lee in The Cat. Which yes. I always like. Wise Lee played Wise Lee. So there you go. So that was last movie's watch. We're, you know, throwing ourselves from topic to topic. But recently, Yu King, you went to the New York Asian Film Festival, an event so sweet, and not only on paper, but it's a kind of a, you know, a very overwhelming event, I reckon. And I'm going to ask you a few questions about that. But first of all, how many times have you visited the festival by now?
This was my fourth year. Right. The festival is in its 10th year.
Really?
And I didn't know about it initially. Maybe I caught wind of it maybe its third year. But I kind of live, you know, about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from New York City. Mm-hmm. So I really didn't want to go in. And no one wanted to go in with me. So, but I think 2008 was the first time I actually, you know, did venture in, and I saw Johnny Toes of the Sparrow.
Right.
Yeah. So, and it's funny because even from 2008 on, the film festival really grew. It was downtown, in the West Village, a small theater, and I remember it's kind of very very folksy the way they set it up. You know, it's one film at a time, and after the Sparrow, one of the festival coordinators, he had a production assistant on the phone, and he spoke over the phone to him, and had the crowd ask him questions over you know, speakerphone. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of silly. It was kind of fun, but you know, the next year, they had Wai Kar Fai there.
Yes.
So it kind of went from speaking to a production assistant on the Sparrow on a cell phone all of a sudden to Wai Kar Fai.
Yeah, he had his then current movie written by shown at the festival. Did they show any of his old movies, or just talked of them during the Q&A?
They showed The Longest Night.
Right. Yes, that's right.
Right. So that was it. Written by and The Longest Night that year. Right. And that was in 2009.
Were you at that Q&A?
Yes. I went to a bunch of them. Yeah, definitely. It was great. Excellent.
I mean, it was such a good opportunity for the audience to show their appreciation for some of the smaller movies of Wai Kar Fai. So, who, by the way, for people who don't know, he co-founded Milky Way with Johnny Toe, and he's a good director in his own right. Every now and again, not all the time, but one of his best movies is, of course, Too Many Ways to Be Number One.
Yes,
the wacky triad movie. I don't know which came first. I've never really looked into it. If Run Lola Run came first, the German movie, or this came, came first.
I think Run Lola Run came first.
Because it uses a kind of similar template, you know, alternate events. But it's such a funny movie, and I was so glad to see that Q&A, for, you know, people applauding when that movie came into the discussion during the Q&A. So
Right. Yeah, the Q&As are on YouTube, so if you guys want to check them out, you know, they're awesome. I think every year someone does film the Q&As, and throws them up on YouTube. So, you know, look for them.
Yeah, we will link to those in the post. Because and that Q&A in particular is filmed well enough for you to hear everything and all of that.
Right. Last year was the Simon Yam and Sammo Hung Q&A, which was awesome.
And that was the first year of the annual Stalker event by you.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe Wai Kar Fai was a bit of a stalker event as well.
Really?
But I think it was on a more grand scale. It was last year with Simon Yam and Sammo Hung and Joyce Godenzi. Yeah, I was a little scary. It's like Travis Bickle.
Whoa. So did you cut your hair for the occasion, therefore?
No, like Travis Bickle? I'm already bald, so.
Oh, okay, there you go. But so this year, what was the attraction this year?
This year was Choi Hawk. Choi Hawk was at the festival. He brought Detective D to the festival. And the festival also was organizing a Wuxia retrospective. So they were showing older films like his Zoo, Warriors from the Magic Mountain, Duel to the Death. They showed.
Oh fuck me!
It was a brand new print as well, and I missed it. I just couldn't make it that day. Yeah. I heard it was an unbelievable print.
That's the type of movie, Duel to the Death and Zoo for that matter. It's just very audience friendly. I mean, Sue perhaps a bit confusing to foreign audiences. Due to the Death, just wonderfully fucking violent.
I was so upset that I missed that movie. They also, I missed Zoo as well, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. They were also showing Dragon Inn, which is Choi Hawk produced, but you know, during a Q&A, we found out he also shot a lot of it.
What a surprise!
Yeah. And The Blade. They actually showed. So, yeah, I was able to make it to The Blade.
Too good.
Which was awesome for me. Is like I hadn't seen these movies in like a dozen years. Mm-hmm. So they also showed a Story of Ricky, which is the same. I haven't seen that, you know, and God knows how long. So going into these movies, it was like seeing them for the first time again. No, I forgot all about Dragon Inn. How sexy, how violent, how funny that movie was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. I said, holy shit. I'm like, did I really see this movie? Yeah.
I mean, it's a striptease fight between Brigitte Lin and Maggie Cheung. So,
oh,
I mean,
I just forgot all about it. And it was just going in like the first time fresh. It was such a good time.
And it's, you know, it's a cliche, but certainly a lot changes when you blow it up on the big screen and all of that. So it's a different experience when with an audience as well. I mean, I reckon there were... At times, anyway, sounds from the audience, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely. There's clapping and woohoos and yeah, you know. Especially they showed Story of Ricky as a midnight show.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it was Friday night midnight, and I live kind of far from the city, but I made the trek in, and about 15 minutes to go before the show started, there was only like 10 people in the audience. I'm like, wait a second, come on, this is Story of Ricky. You know, granted, it's Friday night, midnight, in, you know, the biggest city on earth, and people have better things to do. But thank God, like a mob at the last minute, like 70 people just came in, and
Jurassic Park.
But they like whooped it up and clapped and cheered, and I mean, I cheered, you know, by myself. Like when Yukari Oshima came on the screen, like I applauded like a schmo. And when Hokka Koi came on the screen, I didn't know, woohoo! And, you know, I was the only one, but, you know, it's...
I love you, rapist!
Yes.
Crickets.
Exactly. But, yeah, seeing it with an audience definitely is it's hell of a lot different and so much more fun.
And they seem to, during, like, a very short span, attract some very big names to a festival. I mean, it's nothing small to be able to fly Sammo Hung over, to fly Simon Yam over, to fly Choi Hawk over.
Right,
you know,
right.
That's not a small feat. And why Kafai, for heaven's sake? I mean, big Hong Kong directors buying big movies, buying big production houses.
Definitely.
So it seems like they are like upping the ante for every year now.
Well,
the
year that Wai Kar Fai was there, Lau Ching Wan was supposed to come as well. Uh-huh. But the swine flu broke out in New York City, and his excuse was he was scared of the swine flu, of contracting the swine flu.
All right.
So he canceled his trip, and he sent like a little 4-minute video clip that we all saw.
Right.
You know, saying hello to the audience and thank you and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But that would have been awesome, seeing Lau Ching Wan. Jeez,
yeah.
I would have humped his leg. I don't know.
Yeah, we have a special visitor to the festival here on the podcast here, so watch out for him. He's bald and he's coming for you.
Yeah, and he's in his Category 3 Superman uniform.
Yeah. But you managed to at least not scare off the visitors, the guests, the famous visitors of the festival too much. I mean, you've been able to meet some of them, albeit briefly. You have still met quite a few people over the years, and I'm very, very jealous. I mean, starting with Wai Kar Fai, but Simon Yam last year had a little bit of a conversation as well.
Yeah, a little bit of conversation. I spoke with him. I kind of set it up where, While he was walking in the building, I was going to walk in the building as well. So we kind of bump into each other, and
what a coincidence!
Yes. So I spoke with him briefly, and later on that day, I got his autograph a few times. I spoke with him, briefly again, and I think I may have mentioned before on This Week in Sleaze anyway that a friend of mine, Ian Friedman, we got an interview with Simon Yam. So, I mean, the picture quality and the sound quality is so abhorrent, but we put it up. I think it's online somewhere, but that was awesome to be the cameraman on a Simon Yam interview. Mm-hmm. That was pretty cool. This year was Su Chaoping, the director of Reign of Assassins,
right? Yeah.
The co-director. So I was scheduled to see that show, but I had already seen it on DVD, and
Begs the question. By the way, was that kind of a mainland movie that you had trouble sitting down in front of and didn't like, or what was your take on Reign of Assassins?
Was that Taiwan, Hong Kong co-production?
Yeah, maybe it was a mainland, but it was another period costume movie, and those I have trouble sitting down in front of. I haven't even seen Redcliffe, because I have no desire to.
Redcliffe was actually great. I saw both versions,
sure.
The long one and the short one, and I really dug it. It's excellent.
It's my struggle, personal struggle.
So I understand it totally. Totally.
But Reign of Assassins, how was that?
Reign of Assassins, I didn't get along with, because I'm not into, I don't know, would you call it, a new wave wuxia film?
I don't know.
And I was so excited to see Michelle Yeoh. But did you see the film?
Nope.
Okay, well, I might, I guess I'm not going to blow up the film that much. But Michelle Yeoh, you don't hear her voice in the movie, mm-hmm. which makes sense in the movie when you see it, but I want to see and hear Michelle Yeoh. Mm-hmm. You know, sure. maybe I shouldn't, because all the years in Hong Kong, the voices were dubbed mostly not by her. Mm-hmm. But still, I wanted. It took something away from the movie for me, not being able to hear her actual voice.
It's quite that nowadays you do expect things to be live sound and all of that, and but by mixing all the Mandarin speaking and Cantonese speaking talent, you have to settle on Mandarin usually when it comes to these period movies. And thankfully, in some movies cases, it's not a related movie in terms of genre, but if you watch Kung Fu Hustle, mm-hmm. there it's a mixed language track,
right.
and in same scenes people are speaking Mandarin and Cantonese and all of that. So I'm glad in some cases that there's no trouble for audiences to, at least not Cantonese speaking audiences, because I think the Mandarin tracks for the likes of Kung Fu Hustle is fully Mandarin, rather than mixed. So it seems really out of place with new movies, and but if the movie is good, it kind of makes you forget.
But in the story, her not hearing her actual voice is part of the story. It makes sense in the film.
Right. Okay.
And that's back in the 90s when they just went from film to film to film. They couldn't use their own voices. They were just too busy. And I dug that, and I still dig that. So I guess me calling that out, for Reign of Assassins is kind of silly, but it's something that just kind of irked me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
You react to it, but you're not coming off as hypocritical at all. But it's still
no.
a valid thing you notice.
And it's not a terrible film by any means. It's entertaining. It has its moments. It's just not like I had a discussion on Facebook last night where the Reign of Assassins was mentioned, and I think I said I don't want to see this kind of wuxia film. I want to see like a Chu Yan Ping type of wuxia film, something wild and out of fucking control.
Mm-hmm.
Not something restrained like Reign of Assassins was.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
No, that was just my opinion and how I where I gravitate in the wuxia genre.
Well, it's a preference. It's not. It's not a dismissal of.
Oh no, not at all, not at all.
So I mean, that's fine. I do agree. The wilder the better. And talking to Chu Yan Ping, if you look at a movie like Butterfly Sword,
mm-hmm.
it seems like, since it's so wild as a comedy, it seems like the action director is on board to make the action as wild, if not wilder,
Right, they push the envelope,
Exactly. So, I do agree. I like those movies being dizzying experiences, literally, because mm-hmm. it's so cool seeing all the things twirl and whirl and the camera doing the same, and you not being able to pick up what's going on. That's still cool.
Right.
Things are moving and whooshing. There are sounds, and I like it.
I don't know what's going on, but this is great.
But in other movies' cases, that might be, you know, might infuriate you. So right. You know, you never know.
But, so I was supposed to see Reign of Assassins, but like I said, I'd seen it already, and I was really tired, and I didn't feel like going into. I had to do like, I guess Reign of Assassins, and then Dragon Inn right afterwards. So I'm like, you know what, let me just skip Reign of Assassins. Let me get a few more hours of sleep, and then I'll hit up Dragon Inn. So while I was online for Dragon Inn, Reign of Assassins let out. And it's uncommon, but sometimes directors or whoever's there with the movie, they come out into the lobby. Mm-hmm. So I saw an Asian guy in the lobby, and people were asking for his autograph. So I kind of put two and two together. I'm like, maybe this is Su Chao Ping.
This he is was someone there. I can stalk.
Exactly, because he was there, you know, to present the film. So I asked the girl online in front of me, I'm like, can you hold my space, please? And I whipped out my Reign of Assassins DV, and I asked him for an autograph. And he was very gracious to sign my DVD. And we said, thank you. I said, I'm a fan. You know, da-da-da, do all that stalkerish stuff. And
I went back
to my place in line. Yeah.
You have a leg. I'm going to hump that. That's all part of the agreement. That's what we do in America.
That's how we say hello. So later on that day, after Dragon Inn, Choi Hawk was actually there. He did a little Q&A. So, like, I had, like, an hour walk back to the train station, and it's, like, 95 degrees out. So I'm just chilling out in the air-conditioned theater before I have to, like, make my hour-long trek. So I'm like, all right, 15 minutes pass. I'm like, all right, I'm ready to go. Let me run and catch the train. So as I leave the theater, I'm walking down the theater's stairs, who's in front of me but Choi Hawk and Lung Kong. So I was like, holy crap, this is kismet. So I'm trying to, like, fumble with my bag, trying to get, like, my Peking Opera Blues DVD out. How am I going to, you know, approach him? You know, what do I do? Da, da, da. But thankfully, someone at the bottom of the stairs stopped him and asked for an autograph. And, you know, maybe a handful of people came over, myself included, you know, and were able to get an autograph and able to get a picture with him as well.
Sweet.
I mean,
what a legend. I mean,
so cool.
I personally would have taken there with me my Shanghai Blues DVD, because I think that's my favorite Choi Hawk movie of all time. And still a way too obscure movie because it's not easy to own that movie at all.
So, no, it isn't. No.
But what a legend, and such a cool guy to hear talk as well. I like hearing Choi talk.
He was fun. He was excellent, and he spoke about the era that I love, the early 90s. You know, when he's talking about how the production was just so rapid fire, and sometimes distributors didn't like the cut of the movie, so when the day of the movie's release, you had, like, he said he would set up in a van, and he'd actually recut the movie while they were delivering it to the theater.
Oh, that's great.
I love that. That just made my day. Oh, that was just hearing that stuff. I just love that era of movie making in Hong Kong.
I guess, speaking of cuts and all that, was the different cuts of Dragon Inn brought up in the Q&A? Because the longer version people have seen is actually, according to an earlier book written on Choi Hawk, that's not his preferred cut of the movie, the longer
one. It was brought up, yeah, and he said he did not prefer that movie. There was a lot of excessive men riding on horses.
They extended it for the Laserdisc to make it a double Laserdisc, I believe.
Yes.
Among other things.
Well, yeah, just like what Tai Seng used to do. You know, you buy one movie on one tape is 20, but if you cut it into two tapes, it's $40.
Yep.
So that's what the distributors did. They added extra scenes to pad things out and make those double discs or double tapes for more money. And Choi was not on board with that. But, you know, once the film is out of his hands, you know, it's out of his hands.
Yeah, and, you know, it's infuriating, I guess, at the time. I mean, he had kind of the same experience on Zoo when they decided to shoot the scenes for the international version.
Yes, with
the wraparound story in modern day with Yuen Biu and Moon Lee. But he wanted to be on board with that. I want to shoot that.
Right.
But they didn't let him shoot that. So and made the Time Warriors international edit without his consent. And, you know, as he says on that commentary that he did on the Hong Kong Legends version of the film, I was pissed. Still, you know, it was not like they butchered his Hong Kong cut of the film. That was just something he would have liked to be part of, to be responsible for the international appeal of the movie. But alas, not. So there you go. But, you know, you move on, and now Choi is in probably, hopefully, a comfortable place, and it seems like he finally have a movie out that a lot more people approve of, and that's the Detective D movie. Normally, you know, for the last few years, there's been mixed opinions of Choi Hawk's movies. I haven't seen a lot of his. I think the last one I saw was Missing,
right? Which was the first hour was magnificent,
absolutely,
and then it hit the fucking wall, and it was garbage. Garbage.
I agree. It didn't pan out at all.
Not at all.
And I was not on board with Seven Swords.
Me neither. No.
And as I've always said, and I know you get tired, people, of hearing this, but if you have as much credit to your name as someone like Choi Hawk has, you know, nothing can ruin that legend unless he really fucks himself up, you know, makes us, you know, is responsible for a huge scandal or something like that, you know. Nothing will take away from, you know, my love of his and his movies and Shanghai Blues, which is still absolute joy to watch. And yeah, so there you go. So, but was it intimidating to be in presence of a legend like that? Because because you like beforehand, like, oh, I don't get starstruck. I've met Simon, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And then you like, whoa.
Yeah, I started sweating bullets. I was quivering. I was shaking. You know, it's sort of, you know, I'm in my mid 30s. You know, I shouldn't be acting this way. But for like with Simon Yam and Sammo Hung, it's these you've kind of grown up with these people almost. Mm-hmm. You know, they're in your living room all the time. You know, and you follow their careers, and you kind of know them almost.
Yeah.
You know, a certain way, and when you finally get to meet them, you don't want to act all starstruck, but you just can't help but act starstruck.
Yeah.
It's an overwhelming feeling, and you know, believe me, I was floored. I was on cloud nine. Hmm. It was just the coolest thing in the world to meet Choi Hawk.
Well, I'm very envious, and I do somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm going to try and like plan to. I want to get to this festival because this sounds just fucking cool to be at, and regardless of the strain of traveling and all of that, which I'm not, I don't travel well, because I don't travel at all. But this just sounds so fucking cool. It's such a well organized event. It seems.
Yeah, like, the guys that run the event, you know what? It's refreshing because the movies that they're presenting, they actually love the movies. Mm-hmm. They're not just presenting them because the distributor wants them to present them and sell them. They actually watch the movies and love them and say, I want this fucking movie in my festival.
And for once, Hong Kong love for movies.
Yes,
now, Hong
yes.
Kong cinema is not forgotten.
No, no.
And it's not just them looking in the rearview mirror. They are embracing as much as you can and should, I guess, current movies, but not forgetting Hong Kong cinema. I mean, even all the Hong Kong movies are forgotten by larger audiences because, you know, festivals in particular, they, you know, being in New York, of course, you can get a very, very versatile festival lineup every year, I guess. And but it seems like Hong Kong movie themed festival, if you will, which this is partly anyway, I mean, it's a rarity. And that's why I like the Terracotta Far East Film Festival in the UK as well, because they try to, you know, offer up something for everyone from all over Asia, and that includes Hong Kong as well.
Right.
So I'm very. It warms my heart to see this kind of event play out as successfully as it seems to.
And you know what? It is successful, but I don't think they're making much money on it. You know, they do on occasion have, because the festival does run during the week. They do have trouble selling some, you know, some shows. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't believe they make that much money on it. You know, it's New York City. There's so much to do in New York City, you know, other than going to see an obscure Korean film.
Hopefully they as organizers are very sincere when talking about people they want to bring over, that it's not much of an investment to bring them over. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
They're not, you know, risking, you know, the budget of the festival to bring over someone like Sammo Hung and Choi Hawk, because I think, you know, if they play the cards right, the festival organizers, they can flatter these people rather well, you know, by being sincere. You know what I mean?
We'd like to
put on a retrospective. We really dig your movies. Do you want to come over and you know, bring your latest movie as well? So it's not all, you know, very stiff promotional tool.
It isn't. The festival is not stiff at all. It's actually quite fun. Mm-hmm. And the festival organizers make it fun because they are these, you know, just genial good guys.
Yeah.
You know, and they are peppy and they are happy and they are energetic about the films. And when they come on stage to intro the films, they're yelling out in the audience and they're having fun and, you know, they want audience participation and it's such a good time. They genuinely love these films and love what they do, and that is just, it's not about money, you know, it's just awesome. You know, you feel like you're in good hands when you're there.
One of the, I guess, organizers or at least profiles in the festival, I guess, is Grady Hendrix.
Yes, yeah. Oh, he's a spitfire, man. That guy's
him
out
and
of
his pink costumes.
Yeah,
costumes.
Yeah.
But good on you, Grady. Really, from my view, far, far, far away, you're putting on one hell of a show, and I can only thank you from far away, and I hope to thank you sometime personally for, you know, showing Hong Kong cinema love.
I met him briefly. He's a really, really good guy. Also, Mark Walco. You know, these guys, they really, really do an excellent job, an amazing job.
Cool. We are going to probably like put in some suitable music as a break before we go on to the second installment of Make Ken Watch a Film. And by the way, you really didn't need to force me to watch the movie I'm going to talk about. I would have watched this voluntarily, so be right back. So, welcome back, and it's Make Ken Watch a Film time, and we need a jingle. I think. a short little, you know, 10-second jingle. So, any volunteers? Brian Kirby, want to do something? Something with a tinge of drum and bass, guitar, something quick and efficient. Something, I don't know, fucked up. To my taste. You know. Noise. Do some noise for me. again, this segment is just a way of getting me to watch some films I would have overlooked, because my focus is usually on stuff elsewhere. Crap, mostly. But this pick this week for this episode of Podcast on Fire comes from Joseph Kuby, if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, sir. But again, I hardly felt forced when getting this choice thrown at me, and it's Enter the Game of Death, a Bruceploitation vehicle for Bruce Le from 1981. I should state I'm a fan of Bruceploitation, despite it being shameless exploitation. Like Game of Death, for instance, with its footage from Bruce Lee's funeral, the biggest Bruceploitation movie ever. And it's the worst and kind of the most offensive of all the movies. And it kind of is boring as well. And that funeral footage, I mean, it creeps me out, to be honest.
Oh, yeah,
It's the open casket.
Such poor taste.
I mean, that actually did infuriate me, because it was so... that wasn't needed.
That's exploitation, you know, to the max.
As fun as the movie is occasionally, I mean, the Bruce Lee footage is the best thing about it. That is way down on the list of Bruce Rotation movies for me. But thankfully, there exist movies from the 70s and 80s that are just batshit insane and rather creative. And hopefully Bruce would have laughed if this had become a trend, and he obviously survived. And hopefully he laughs from somewhere else, who knows. And it's often... The best ones, like Tower of Death, is aka Game of Death 2, by the way. It's just solid enjoyment and creative, hokey enjoyment. You know, really cheesy, and they sort of know they are as well. But they try to be creative and show some chops as well. Clones of Bruce Lee, the movie. Who's, you know, the idea of the movie is strong enough to carry the movie, by the way. But it delivers within the movie. You know, all I have to say is John Benn stars as the doctor who clones the very the clones that look nothing like Bruce Lee. his lab is all equipped with disco lights, and it's crazy. Clones of Bruce Lee is wonderful. And Dragon Lives Again with Bruce Leung is this... it's set in the afterlife, and it's a free-for-all movie with Bruce Leung versus the Man with No Name, aka the Clint Eastwood character from the westerns. Satoichi, he squares off against one-armed swordsman, not Jimmy Wang Yu though. Emmanuel is in this movie as well, humping people to death, and Eric Tsang plays Popeye.
That's awesome.
So you have like this wild time of that. So Bruceploitation at its best wasn't really about exploiting the image of Bruce Lee. It was about, you know, seeing how creative and insane we can get, you know what I mean? And I love it when it's at its best. And so do you have any experience watching these clones movies, or and does it appeal to you as an idea?
It's something that does appeal to me. I've always wanted to get more into it. I've only seen maybe a handful of them, like Bruce Lee in New Guinea, or Bruce Lee fights back from the grave. It's something that I've always wanted to get into further, because I like the exploitation element of it, and it's very silly, and it's something that does really it's kind of geared toward my sensibilities. Mm-hmm. I just haven't gotten into them.
Well,
unfortunately,
recommendations I can give you is Tower of Death, aka Game of Death 2, Clones of Bruce Lee, and The Dragon Lives Again. And I think they'll remain the premium offerings, if you will, of the genre. Bruce Lee, the star event of Game of Death, he was never my favorite Bruce. Actually, Bruce Lai, or Ho Chung Tao, I think his other Chinese name is, was my favorite, because Bruce Lai possessed some solid chemistry and looks. He was actually quite, in my view, handsome for, you know, cinema. And he could have broken out easily from the Bruce Lee copy clone mold, which I don't think he ever really did. But he starred in some like modern day thrillers and modern day actioners. And so it was rather like, I think Bruce Lai didn't really fit being a Bruce Lee clone. I think he fit other movies much, much better, you know. So it was almost like beneath him to do the all Bruce Lee mannerisms and gestures, and if you will. But what are you gonna do? There was something commercial about being a Bruce Lee clone, I guess, during the 70s and all that. So, but then you have people like Dragon Lee, this Korean martial artist who looks absolutely ridiculous when imitating Bruce Lee, and it's kind of awesome, but also very irritating. But then again, Bruce Lee, he has you know, strength and power as an action performer to a decent degree. He has some chops. He's not handsome as a leading man who could carry a movie outside of all of this, but he had some ambition outside of the Bruce exploitation mold. One of his better ones, which he actually directed, is this movie called Challenge of the Tiger, where he stars against Richard Harrison, out of all things. It's not an IT movie, actually. Richard Harrison has a wonderful scene in this movie. He has two main classic scenes. And Harrison's is this naked, topless tennis match.
Oh, jeez.
Well, he's not topless, I don't think, anyway. But obviously his opponents, his girls, are topless.
Slow motion. I like it already.
It's in slow motion as well. And Bruce Lee fights a bull. And it's awesome. And the cap to that scene is actually a reference back to to Street Fighter, Sonny Chiba's Street Fighter, the X-ray, the X-ray vision of Street Fighter, you know, when you see the skeleton basically rupture, I think. They do that with the bull.
Oh, jeez.
So it's great. Challenge of the Tiger. It's on a double bill DVD from America, which... the other movie is this For Your Height Only.
Yes, I've seen that. Wang.
Yeah, that's his name. I haven't seen that movie. I have the DVD, but I haven't seen that movie yet, but I have it in my files. And, you know, as a technical aside, Challenge of the Tiger, the print that they got for that DVD looks absolutely shamelessly good.
Really?
Because, yeah, it's like, whoa, where did this come from? It looked untouched, very colorful, and like, whoa. Because you don't, you know, widescreen, yeah, you can get that normally, but you don't expect that quality out of, you know, a low-budget Bruceploitation movie, which it kind of isn't. It isn't much of that. He even has his shirt on for most of the film, you know. So there you
go. As he should, yeah.
Yeah. But also on Bruce Lee, he made a few war action dramas. I think one of which you know, I'm going to ask you a little bit about that, or if you've seen that. One was Ninja Over the Great Wall, which was this decently budgeted movie. Quite boring, though. But out of all things, it was mixed in Dolby, which is a rarity for Hong Kong movies in 1990, especially low-budget movies like this. They didn't embrace Dolby surround sound for, you know, occasionally they did in the 90s, but not for that movie, you know. And but the movie I was going to mention that I haven't seen is this Category 3 movie called Comfort Women, which I'm wondering if you've seen.
I do have it as a DVD-R. I have yet to watch it, though.
It seems like it is a war drama, but also mixes in at least nudity to warrant a Category 3 rating. But so I'm wondering
how... I think
it's how...
like a war atrocity film. Maybe not as gross as like Laboratory of the Devil or Men Behind the Sun, but I think it's in the same vein. Uh-huh. But I think it has to deal with prostitution rather than horrible experiments on prisoners.
The review on Hong Kong Movie Database asked, like, is this war drama, cheap exploitation, moral statements, is it propaganda, is this a cash-in on the trend? But despite all those questions, that reviewer gave it like a 7 out of 10.
Right on. Yeah.
So it might have something to offer up, and it's on DVD, Comfort Women, and probably known as something else as well. And he directed and probably starred in that as well, Bruce Lee. So he wanted something. Maybe he didn't execute it well, but he wanted something to say something, apparently. So
right.
There you go. But anyway, back to Enter the Game of Death. One of the best titles, Bruceploitation titles, because it mixes in, you know, keywords. It hits hard and keywords associated with the Bruce Lee movie legacy. Enter the Game of Death! So, and it lifts up to it during a fairly kick-ass 20-minute real mid-movie in the pagoda, because obviously they have a pagoda fight scenario where through different levels and all of that, like Game of Death did. But the rest is pretty standard and even like tired Bruceploitation. And you know, it shows in the way too long action intro against the red background, because it goes on way too long and pads the movie way too long. But the newly generated credits does say superstarring Bruce Lee, so you can chuckle at that for a few minutes, you know. Superstarring, alrighty, you have something to live up to. And it doesn't really, but superstarring is funny as hell. They did that for the intro to Monty Python Live at the Hollywood Bowl movie, you know. Superstarring super alphabetically in big neon signs as well. So that was good fun. It takes a while, the movie, before it finds its footing, as I said, with the pagoda fighting scenario, and it feels very randomly strung together. I mean, Le's first fight is in a forest, right out of the blue, no setup, and cut to, after that, a ring fight with him in Bolo, where Le kicks Bolo in the balls, which is uncool.
That's funny.
But it's like, okay, what? Okay, so maybe this will make sense eventually, but it's really random. And there's some nonsense about this document that the Chinese must retrieve from the Japanese, and there's double agents, and Le being reluctant to help retrieve the document, hence not being looked at as a good Chinese. But eventually he does enter into this game of death, because his sister is raped in a rape scene that isn't so much a rape scene as just a guy drooling over his sister, essentially, and then cuts to, you know, there's no actual rape scene. Kind of lame, goofy, but then again, you don't need rape in every movie, you see. We can be spared. We can be spared once. You know, we watch so many rape scene movies, you and I. So, you know, sometimes it's okay.
I agree with that. Yeah.
You know, to not have that, but that's his, you know, breaking point. You know, now I gotta fight. Now my Chinese spirit is ignited. So, you know, it settles on the document plot, thankfully, because it's confusing before. You know, make up your mind what you're doing with all this random footage. And the document plot is kind of in the IFD tradition of, you know, in their ninja exploitation movies, it always was like a plot centering around a document with a plan, you know, a grand plan to take over the world, or a formula to create a weapon. And that formula sometimes was stored on a VHS tape in IFD's movies. Yeah, no shit. And the final ninja fight scene, therefore, they put the tape in a tree, you know, and I'll fight to the death, and whoever wins can take the tape.
Jeez.
Oh, it's wonderful. But anyway, as standard, as tired as Enter the Game of Death often feels, it's a it's amusing enough at points, and you know, the war cries that you associate with Bruce Lee that they obviously put in these movies, it's actually more part of the soundtrack rather than Le's character doing the war cries. So they make a bed of sound that includes the war cries, which,
oh wow,
it's akin to creativity, really. I've never heard it, because normally, you know, it's just them doing, you know, the old tired war cries and touching of the nose and all of that, which Le's character does. But that was surprising. But the pagoda fight is the main attraction, and I'm going to describe two of them, because four of the fights, out of the four fights, only two of them really work. And the first one is really cool because Le squares off against Li Hoi San, which is the main bad guy from Magnificent Butcher and a bunch of Golden Harvest and even the Shaw Brothers films. You know, Leo Sang is just kick ass, and it's a great fun little weapons duel, actually. And but the real centerpiece is where he, during the next level, faces off against a snake master who uses real snakes as his weapons. He throws them at Le, but he also uses them as he fights snake style.
Jeez.
And then comes the animal cruelty, because the true eyebrow race in this scene is, for real, the snake master cutting the head of one of the snakes and squirting the blood at Le, but he just moves to the side and then he avoids the blood, and he looks stunned, you know, even he is stunned, like, whoa. And, you know, the exploitation star was stunned. And then it all peters out. The rest of the fights doesn't register as such, and the movie, like, you know, it's mid-movie this pagoda sequence happens, and therefore they can't do the pagoda sequence forever, obviously. It's a 90-minute movie, so, you know, it's all tolerable, but only barely, and this endless slow-motion fighting towards the end of the film that do test your patience. But, you know, at least it had a fairly good reel that, you know, got your attention quite a bit, and therefore End of the Game of Death is a lot better than most Bruce exploitation movies, because some of them are really, really boring, including the ones that Bruce Le starred in and directed. Even he directed himself in Bruce exploitation, even, so he didn't think that was beneath him,
right?
But yeah, its main attraction was mid movie, but it attracted me quite a bit, and that's always something.
Cool.
So thanks for the suggestion, Joseph. I enjoyed this. And if you want to suggest more movies, I have a few in the pipeline. Japanese and Hong Kong and Taiwan. So it's varied, and even Korea. So it's I'm taking on all of them, aside from maybe, you know, if someone suggests an abstract art house thingy, I think going to be more mad than fair against that kind of movie. If you force me to watch, Fallen Angels again, I'm not going to watch that again.
I like that. That was good.
That wasn't good. I didn't get it. You know what? Back then, I was more harsh in the movie. But when I first watched it, it's like, this is shit. Nowadays, I would probably say, I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get the appeal for me, so, you know.
Right.
So, having said that, maybe I will watch Fallen Angels if someone suggests it to me, but it you know, it will be hard.
I suggest you watch Fallen Angels.
Well, the way to suggest movies, you can click on the forum topic link that I've put in the show post, where you can suggest movies for me. You can suggest them on our Facebook, the facebook.com/POF network, and even my Facebook. And also my FormSpring account, where you can ask me questions, any question, and even throw out movie suggestions. That's located at www.formspring.me/sogoodreview. So if you want to suggest a movie, do it via the proper channels.
I'm doing it right now.
I dare you. Asshole. But you know what? The reason if I'm supposed to do it for the show, yeah, that's akin to work, but it's something about doing it for this show that makes it easier to do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you'd ask me to review it on my site, that would mean harder work. but reviewing it for the show,
sure,
isn't as much hard work. So it's a balance that balance between fun and work, and sometimes work is fun because I get to do it on this show, which I love. So there you go. But man, the End of the Game of Death, Tower of Death, aka Game of Death 2, Clones of Bruce Lee, and The Dragon Lives Again. Those are fun. And there's probably a whole lot more that I haven't seen that are fun. So if you have any fun Bruce Plotation titles that you want to recommend me, regardless of doing it for this segment or not, just please do. And via these addresses, this segues into the contact information. We're almost at the end of the show. podcastonfire.com, the main site for the Podcast on Fire network and its shows. And our forum where you can interact with us is located at podcastonfire.com/forum. Look us up on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. And as I said, facebook.com/POF network. Like our page and ask us questions and interact with us there as well. And myself, in terms of Twitter, is twitter.com/sogoodreviews. You can find my written reviews at sogoodreviews.com and the video reviews at thesmellysleazykvideo.com. And you'll have to clean up after yourself.
Bring tissues or use your sock.
Yeah. and maybe you should do that at your blog as well. I don't know how you see that, if that blog is dirty akin to Sleazy Case. But regardless, where is that blog?
My blog, Bullets Over Chinatown, is at inthemoodforguailo.blogspot.com. Again, Guailo is G-W-A-I-L-O. And it's not as dirty as your site. I try to make it just dirty enough without going there.
It's fucking piss yellow. That's dirty to me.
it's Bruce Lee jumpsuit yellow.
There you go. Well, you need to have some black stripes in there. By the way, he has that jumpsuit in End of the Game of Death, obviously.
Oh, cool.
I forgot to mention that. Because you wear that and on any occasion, really. Whatever you do. But that jumpsuit was only cool twice. When Bruce Lee wore it and when in Kill Bill, when
indeed.
They redesigned it for Uma Thurman. Because cool people make the jumpsuit cool.
Yes, exactly.
That's how it works. But anyway, this was episode 93. Thank everybody for listening and supporting us. So this is Kenneth Wilson signing off, and with me was
King Who.
See you guys later.